So for this weekend, Father Chaz and I have felt moved that he would be preaching at each of the masses. And so gratefully, Father Chaz, welcome you, not only back on behalf of the parish, as you have been being welcomed, but thank you for preaching for us this morning. I am going to remain standing while Father Chaz preaches. It's going to be important that you know that this comes from him and it comes from me as well.
Greetings, everyone. Long time no see. Congratulations to the Badals. Where are they? Joey and Kara. There they are. And also to the Sousa Fernandez family, Savio and Andrea. They're going to have their kids baptized, Ezekiel and Boyer. So very happy for you and great to see you. I'm preaching at all the masses today because of a serious topic that needs to be addressed. So on Wednesday, I had to get up really early. I was in Oxford still and celebrate 6:30 a.m. Mass for the Solemnity of the Assumption because I would be on the plane all day long, flying over the Atlantic, getting back from my sabbatical. It may be a surprise to you that two of my first emotions upon my return to the United States were not excitement and joy. Don't get me wrong, I was indeed very eager to get back to home sweet home of Jackson and to see you all again. But unfortunately, the two emotions I had upon my return were anger and sorrow. Because Wednesday was also the day when I had read in the news about something that I'm sure likewise sickened and infuriated you. And to not address it today, even though the homily is supposed to be on the readings, would be not to recognize the elephant in the room. For those who have not guessed it already, I'm referring to the grand jury report whose investigation found probable cause that over the last 70 years, over 300 church workers, most of them priests, had inappropriate contact with most likely over a staggering 1,000 young people. I would use more precise language, but for the various ages in our congregation today. For anyone who has read about some of the most egregious cases, you know that inappropriate contact is putting it very lightly. The most serious accusations are truly repulsive and monstrous. And to do these things while involving Christian imagery, which a couple of cases happened, makes it even more diabolical. I can't imagine the incredible pain and the shame that these victims experienced at the hands of people who had the sacred duty of protecting them from such harm. And so that's why, perhaps like you, I was saddened and enraged. It brought me back to when I was in seminary back in 2002, when many of these revelations first brought to public light. Made the sermon of the priesthood hard, right? I've had, you know, people ask me, how is this happening over again, all over again? Didn't we have a zero tolerance policy in place in 2002? And the answer is yes. We have had a zero tolerance policy as well as mandatory training in identifying potential abusers for all church workers and even those who volunteer with children. And it's starting to work because almost all of these incidents of those 300 church workers in Pennsylvania were before this past decade. In fact, the vast majority of the cases happened between the 60s and the 90s. But there's still a big problem, a huge failure, in that the zero tolerance policy in place for priests and other church workers wasn't being consistently applied to bishops, who seem to be above the law. So what we are undergoing in this grand jury report and in finding about the double life, for example, of the now ex-Cardinal McCarrick is a deeper realization of all the evil that has been covered up in these past decades. And it's been taking years to pore through all the documentation that was originally covered up by church leaders who cared more about avoiding scandal than about the victims whose lives were shattered. Another reason, too, we're hearing more stories of abuse in the church is that since 2002, more and more victims, fortunately, have gotten the courage to tell their stories even after decades of harboring this shame and keeping it to themselves. So as horrific as it is to hear these stories, it's only by exposing these networks of iniquity in the church that we can purge them. Which is why not only abusers, but those church leaders who covered up and enabled those abusers to continue on committing their iniquities need to be held accountable. And I pray, both of us have been praying, in fact, that the trials going on, both civil and canonical, will do so. The cover-up culture and the turning of a blind eye to these networks of iniquity have to go. Since all the bishops in the world essentially report to the Vatican, part of the problem is that there's not enough expert human resources that advise the Pope on the ground in each of the countries on these specific cases. So part of what's needed is a task force that includes a number of lay Catholic faithful who are experts in forensics to help evaluate such cases. Whatever is done, a draining of the swamp is needed. You don't protect the church by protecting those who harm people in the church. What kind of crazy logic is that? Just a few weeks ago, we heard in a reading from Jeremiah, "Woe to the shepherds who mislead and scatter the flock of my pasture." And Jesus himself used the strongest possible language for those who would prey upon the most vulnerable, and that it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. And he did not mince words in rebuking the religious leaders of the time, the Jewish religious leaders, for their abuses of power, right? "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs that which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how are you going to escape being sentenced to hell?" So Jesus assures us that justice will come to the unrepentant. But that may be little comfort here and now, because I know you, the Catholic faithful, are hurting. You know, you hear these stories and your hearts are broken. And so as a priest and your pastor, I am sorry for these shameful failures and the moral depravity of these clergy who live the very opposite lives for which they are ordained. Many of us feel betrayed, right? How in the world can this be? What do we tell our kids? They're hearing all kinds of things. How can I even be part of a church whose leaders can be so hypocritical and has allowed such evil things to happen to the most vulnerable? You know, there's no easy answers, but what I can share with you is what keeps me going as someone who is looked on as suspect by much of the world just because of the collar I wear underneath these vestments. What keeps me going is the fact that my faith is not in our church leaders and a fallen humanity. You know, when you look through history, they have failed us many times over. So my faith, our faith, is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, who is ever faithful to us in our own struggles. And part of that undying fidelity of Christ is what he gives, that he gives himself to us right here on this altar. He shows up time and time again, in season and out of season. In Jesus, God is willing to enter into the messiness of our existence. He who knew no sin became sin, gives himself to us in the Eucharist for the forgiveness of ours. And as we heard in today's gospel, "I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever, and the bread that I will give is my flesh for the life of the world." You know what else keeps me going? You. Seeing you all here at Mass every Sunday, praying this thing through, not giving into despair. Seeing how God is working in your own lives and in your families. You know, remember that clergy may be the most visible representatives of the church, but they make up a very small fraction of the body of Christ. You, the lay faithful, make up the vast majority of what is Christ's church. Without you, the vocation, our vocation, would have no meaning. So let's not forget all the good the Lord is accomplishing in his beloved bride. how he continually renews our lives and forgives us of our own sins that have hurt the people around us. Let's remember the immense good that he's doing right here at our beloved parish of St. John, the increasing popularity of our faith formation and our worship events by which people are encountering Jesus in powerful and palpable ways, the friendships being formed through Alpha and the small groups, the rise of our parish representatives for that increased involvement of the lay faithful in our parish life, our great school environment, and the profound healing from past hurts that's going on in many of your lives, I know. These are just some of the ways that the Holy Spirit is inspiring great and mighty works right here in our midst. And finally, let's remember that the times in history where there has been a renewal and a resurgence of saints in the church is not, they haven't come through those prosperous times of comfortable Catholicism. No, they've come in the very midst of persecution and in those times where the church has needed purification. So in closing, let's not leave Jesus just because we may have to share the table with Judas. But let's be part of that next resurgence, continuing on, carrying the cross as Jesus exhorts us, caring for the victims of abuse, not adding to them. Let's lift those victims up in prayer at this very Mass. God will use even this evil wrought by human hands to purify his church. The Lord's goodness and his faithfulness will not be outdone.
It's important for me to add that it has been tragic for me too, and that I feel betrayed too, and that I don't even frankly know how you even look at me right now, because you feel the shame of the brotherhood. And I can stand here and I can tell you, hey, you know, that's really not my life, and the only thing you can do is trust me. But how are you supposed to trust me? I don't blame you. I don't. If you feel like it's hard to trust. I've already spoken to families this week who are not coming back to the Catholic Church, and I don't blame them either. And so, what do we do? I was cutting my hair yesterday morning, and I thought to myself, maybe I should just shave my head. And I don't know if I didn't shave my head because it would have been too over the top, or frankly because I was just too much of a coward. I don't know. Maybe I was a coward. But the truth is that Jesus comes to unite us, even in the gospel, as he says in the Bread of Life discourse, the great sacrament of unity. And it's no surprise that Satan goes for the jugular and attacks the sacrament of holy orders and the sacrament of marriage to do everything he can to divide us and to make the world around us untrustworthy and to separate us, to isolate us. And as I was praying about, Lord, what do you do? And he responded with two words: radical holiness. Radical holiness. The only control that I ever have is over my own life and over my own heart. And if I don't make a decision to be radically holy, the most I'm ever going to be is unhelpful. The worst I'm going to be is gravely harmful. And none of us need that. And I'm not here to scandalize anybody, but I'm capable of that. We all are. Given the right circumstances, with the right kind of broken heart, with the right set of temptations, none of us is immune to grave evil. And so it's good for us to have not a suspicion, but a healthy knowledge of the fact that every single one of us needs grace. And that I too, as you, we all need to take the very next step in holiness, radically so, particularly in times such as these when everybody's hurting, and I feel betrayed too. And I'm going to walk around for the next 3 weeks and in public, as Father Chaz said, and you just become guilty by association. And you know what? That's probably a little bit deserved. Not that I've done anything wrong, but that you do bear responsibility. And so what's really important for us to do is to pray for each other. If you think that your priest is a good and holy man, chances are you're right. And for that reason in particular, you need to pray for him and to pray that God protect him, because Satan comes after people like me, and he comes after people like you, and he's going to do anything he can to cause scandal and division and unspeakable evils, and people like me can perpetrate that. And so we need to pray for each other. And to be able to look each other in the eye in honesty and in charity, and not to distrust each other, but to commit even more strongly to each other, and to pray ever more faithfully for each other, and to ask not only that God's forgiveness be given, but also that God's justice be given, both for those who perpetrated the acts and those who allowed them and enabled them to continue. So this isn't meant to overcome us with discouragement. And we're here and you're here because you don't believe in the trustworthiness of fallen man, but because you believe in the promises of Jesus. And that... That's encouraging to me. I was at the 9:30 Mass of St. Joseph giving out communion. I started crying. I was thinking to myself, how can they even receive communion from me right now? What might some people think of somebody like me, even if they didn't know me, and even if that judgment was unfair, just understanding the sacredness of the task, both to be here as a priest, but also for us as laymen and women and as families, as mothers and fathers, to make that decision to trust each other. It's no small thing. And so we simply ask Jesus for healing. And we ask Jesus to help us to remember to love each other, to hug each other, to tell each other we love each other, to keep each other accountable, to intercede and to pray for each other, and to become radically holy. And when you and I become radically holy, this evil will end. And it should.